Well, thank you, Ken, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Like many conservatives, my life was changed by 1964, and I was fortunate to work closely with an extraordinary man, courageous and cantankerous, inspiring and infuriating, profound and profane. I remember when I went to him as his new director of information, I was excited and full of plans to promote him personally and his many personal interests, his flying, his photography, his ham radio, his specially equipped Thunderbird, his love for the American Indian, his heroism during World War II. His blunt response as I outlined this program to me was, "If you try any of that crap, I'll throw your ass out of this campaign." "This will be a campaign," he said, "not of personalities, but of principles." He would not be packaged or positioned or compromised. And he refused to take himself seriously. Asked what he would do if the Soviets attacked, he replied, "Circle the wagons." Queried about a rumor that a film would be made about him, he conceded it was true by 18th Century Fox. He was, in fact, sui generis. "Listen, I have little interest in streamlining government or in making it more efficient, for I mean to reduce its size. I do not undertake to promote welfare, for I propose to extend freedom. My aim is not to pass laws, but to repeal them. It's not to inaugurate new programs, but to cancel old ones that do violence to the Constitution, or that have failed in their purpose, or that impose on the people an unwarranted financial burden. I will not attempt to discover whether legislation is needed before I have first determined whether it is constitutionally permissible. And if I should later be attacked for neglecting my constituents' interests, I shall reply that I was informed that their main interest is liberty, and in that cause, I'm doing the very best I can." Newt Gingrich, Dick Armey, Phil Graham. No, that's Barry Goldwater. "Contract with America, Conscience of a Conservative." Proclaimed in 1995, no, written in 1960. 35 years after it was first published, that passage retains its amazing power. Its ability to make one say, "Yes, that's the kind of legislator we need." Now, we can imagine its electrifying impact on young conservatives in the year 1960, after 8 years of President Eisenhower's dime store New Deal, and in the middle of the 1960 presidential race between Tweedledum Kennedy and Tweedledum D. Nixon. Now, the link between these uncompromising words, "my aim is to not to pass laws, but to repeal them," and the historic Republican win last November is direct and unmistakable. Indeed, Senator Graham, chairman of the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee that helped produce the Republican majority in the Senate, has said, quote, "My first political thoughts in the 11th grade came from the Conscience of a Conservative." In his usual grandiloquent style, House Majority Leader Dick Armey calls Goldwater the great progenitor, the patriarch to whom we proudly trace our lineage. And Duncan Hunter, former chairman of the House Republican Conference, states that the 73 new Republican congressmen live by the Goldwaterite message, "Government is too big and spends too much." Now, what is most remarkable about Barry Goldwater is that he not only had a conscience, but that he acted on it, and constantly. He felt obligated to do right, guided by the traditional virtues of prudence, courage, and justice, although rarely, it must be admitted, moderation. For example, having set forth his conservative principles in The Conscience of a Conservative, Goldwater applied them, stating that the only solution to the farm problem is the prompt and final termination of the farm subsidy program. Government has a right, he said, to claim an equal percentage of each man's wealth and no more. That is, he endorsed a flat tax. Because the welfare state transforms the individual from a dignified, industrious, self-reliant spiritual being into a dependent animal creature, without his knowing it, welfareism must first be a private concern, with public intervention primarily by local and state authorities rather than the federal government. The function of our schools, asserted Goldwater, is not to elevate society, but to educate individuals. The last third of The Conscience of a Conservative was devoted to the Cold War, which, according to the senator, the enemy was determined to win while the United States and the rest of the free world were playing for a tie. He proposed a 7-point program to achieve victory, including the maintenance of defensive alliances like NATO, the elimination of economic foreign aid, military superiority over the Soviet Union, and the encouragement of captive peoples to overthrow their captors. While conceding that such a policy did involve the risk of war, Goldwater argued that any policy short of surrender carried such a risk. He predicted that the future world would unfold along one of two paths. Either the communists would retain the offensive, ultimately forcing us to surrender or to accept war under the most disadvantageous circumstances, or Americans would summon the will and the means for taking the initiative and wage a war of attrition against the communists, seeking to bring about, and I quote, the internal disintegration of the communist empire. For Americans who cherish their lives, but their freedom more, he concluded, the choice cannot be difficult. And it was the latter course, a war of attrition that President Reagan and the American people chose in the 1980s, leading the nation and the world, to what Goldwater predicted in 1960, the disintegration of the Soviet Empire, victory in the Cold War, both without firing a nuclear shot. Now, let me say here, and Ken has already taken a little bit of my thunder away, that yes, it's true that Barry Goldwater did not write The Conscience of a Conservative. The actual words flowed from a red-haired Midwestern Roman Catholic convert named L. Brent Bozell, senior editor of National Review and brother-in-law of the famed William F. Buckley, Jr. But theirs was a true collaboration, with the senator reviewing each chapter as it was written and approving the final draft. Everything in The Conscience of a Conservative is consistent with Goldwater's positions during the 1950s when he was a senator from Arizona and with what he said and proposed during his indispensable run for the presidency in 1964. I say indispensable, for if Barry Goldwater had not been the GOP's presidential candidate in 1964, I believe there would have been no Reagan Revolution in the 1980s and no historic Republican victory last November. Well, consider, if Goldwater had not won the Republican nomination for president, Reagan would certainly not have been asked by nominee Nelson Rockefeller or William Scranton or Richard Nixon to deliver his brilliant TV address, A Time for Choosing, in the closing days of the campaign. And if he had not given that speech, Reagan would not have become a national political star overnight and gone on to become governor of California in 1966 and then president of these United States in 1980. Goldwater's conservative conscience was not a sometime thing. in 1964 during the campaign over the objections of most of his advisors. His conscience drove him again and again to say publicly what many in Congress would only admit privately: Social Security was an actuarial trouble and would be strengthened through a voluntary option. To suggest that parts of TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority, ought to be sold to the private sector. To oppose the busing of school children as an example of doctrinaire and misguided egalitarianism. To endorse a constitutional amendment allowing voluntary prayer in public schools. He quoted Tom Jefferson, quote, "God who gave us life gave us liberty. Can the liberties of a nation be secure when we have removed a conviction that these liberties are the gift of God?" To seek to strengthen the nation's schools through tax credits to those who bear the cost of education, the parents. To state unequivocally that the rights of victims should always take precedence over the rights of criminals. Beyond question, Goldwater's bold articulation of private solutions to public problems laid the foundation for Nixon's appeal to the silent majority in 1968, Reagan's themes of less government and stronger national defense in 1980, and Newt Gingrich's contract with America in 1994. Although not really understood at the time, the 1964 campaign transformed the Republican Party into the conservative party, the anti-big government party, and the Democratic Party into the liberal party, the pro big government party. And most importantly, it broke the Democratic back of the solid South. The transformation of our two parties in American politics would not have occurred without the conservative conscience and the actions based on that conscience of Barry Goldwater. In his famous soliloquy that begins, "To be or not to be," Hamlet says that conscience does make cowards of us all. But Hamlet is referring to those who don't have the courage of their convictions, who fail to take arms against a sea of troubles. There is no sickly, pale cast of thought or irresolution about Barry Goldwater. He does not suffer quietly the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, especially when launched from the left. Now, has Goldwater ever erred? Of course he has. As his former Senate colleague Sam Nunn has remarked, Barry's motto has always been the same: ready, fire, aim. No one hits the bullseye every time. Goldwater's present-day views on abortion, gay rights, the Christian right are far off the mark in the minds of most conservatives, most of us in this room. Conscience can mislead when it loses its moorings. If not grounded in the right principles, conscience is merely opinion. But why does Goldwater attack Christian conservatives, asserting they shouldn't be involved in politics, defend gays in the military? "You don't need to be straight to fight and die for your country," he says. "You just need to shoot straight." That's a good line, by the way. Why does he counsel Republicans to admit any reference to abortion in their national platform? Well, to begin, Goldwater is being what he's always been: provocative, unpredictable, in your face. As Bill Buckley says, Goldwater was born with an inclination to keep his listeners on their toes. Secondly, Goldwater is 86, albeit a vigorous 86. There are signs of what I call the Truman Syndrome, when a man in his later years says anything he damn well pleases without regard for the consequences. Third, Goldwater is no longer elected representative of the people of Arizona or of the Republican Party. He is only a constituency of one, himself. Fourth, like all of us, Goldwater personalizes his positions. He has, in fact, a gay grandson and a lesbian niece. And there's a long history of abortion in his family. But there's another, and I think, central philosophical reason for his current positions. The traditionalist libertarian balance, the fusionism that prevailed within the Goldwater of the 1950s and 1960s, has been replaced by a strong libertarian tilt, an almost unbridled emphasis on the individual, regardless of the issue. Goldwater has seemingly forgotten what he wrote in The Conscience of a Conservative, that the economic and spiritual aspects of man's nature are inextricably intertwined. He neglects that in 1964 he constantly called for morality in government and asserted that those in public office must avoid scandal and corruption and set a good example to help bring about a good society. In 1964, Goldwater was a political fusionist. Today, he is a fissionist. Still, for all his fulminations, most conservatives comment, as Phyllis Schlafly does, well, let him enjoy his retirement. His legacy is the way the 27 million who braved the vitriol of big media in 1964 lived to grow into the 54 million that validated the Reagan Revolution in 1980 and 1984. Conservatives should not fall into the liberal trap of arguing that Goldwater is no longer a conservative. The main themes of his 64 campaign, repealing laws, reducing government, cutting taxes, eliminating subsidies and regulations, maintaining a strong defense, are the central themes of the contract with America, which produced a Republican majority in the Congress last November and which have the liberals on the run today. Now, as to the topic of this panel, you thought I'd never get to it, maybe. It's really quite easy, I think, to say what the conscience of a conservative should be in the 1990s. It's the same as the conscience of a conservative in the 1960s or the 1860s or the 1760s. The conscience remains the same because the principles of conservatism that undergird the conscience remain the same. Unlike the quickly dated beliefs of liberalism, that government is best which governs most, the basic principles of conservatism are as valid today as they were at the time of the founding of the Republic. A committed Jeffersonian, Barry Goldwater, would argue that these principles include individualism, a belief in the ability of man to reason and therefore govern himself, republicanism, government should be kept as close to the people as possible, anti-centralism, the rights of the states must be protected against the federal government, strict constructionism, the federal government can only exercise power delegated to it by the Constitution. And finally, the reality that man is not only an economic, but a spiritual creature. These conservative principles will never go out of date, any more than the Ten Commandments, or the Golden Rule, or the Constitution ever will.